Welcome to Book Choice. I'm Beverly Rose Muller, and today we're talking to a former Pretoria schoolboy, Lord Peter Hayne, famously a former disruptor of sport in the 1970s, an exile with his family in the UK and senior British politician who remains an activist and has written 27 books. He's here to talk to us about his latest, Liberation and Corruption, Why Freedom Movements Fail. But before that, briefly, your career as a 20-year-old who managed to disrupt test matches and the whole world of sport, including ridding South Africa of international sport and resulting in your being called Hayne the Pain. Did that sudden global exposure prepare you for the more formal world of politics?
I suppose it must have done, because anti-apartheid politics was in my DNA through my parents. And when I found myself leading campaigns to stop all-white South African rugby, Springbok tours and cricket tours and other sports tours, I found myself propelled into that leadership. And I focused on sport because, as a white South African boy, sport was in my lifeblood as well.
Well, I think we all know how much rugby particularly meant to white South Africans, still does today. And we saw that in 1995 when we won the World Cup and we all came together and hugged each other and thought that the world was going to be beautiful. And then that didn't quite happen. So let's go back to your current book of 27. And you've also, some of those, in fact, are novels as well as non-fiction.
Thrillers, yes.
And this is a kind of thriller, but sometimes in a frightening kind of way. The book usefully looks at many nations and continents that have gone through liberation struggles and then scandals. Isn't this inevitable when the have-nots suddenly come into the haves? After all, South Africa didn't pay a guilt tax, a wealth tax for centuries of privilege, and after massive challenges, then had to deal with coping with the millions.
Well, I looked into this because I was haunted by the fact of what had happened in South Africa, that the ANC of Mandela and Tambo that I'd supported as a young man and a boy, and my parents had been active alongside, suddenly seemed to betray all the struggles, all the values that it had stood for under Mandela and Tambo and their fellow leaders. And I wanted to know why. And when I looked at other liberation movements across the world, it seemed a common pattern. Once they get into power, they become corrupt. Mahatma Gandhi's Congress Party in India, not a liberation struggle, but an independence struggle, ended up the same way, in power, becoming corrupt.
Well, in fact, I wanted to talk about that because you mentioned the UK. I mean, this book covers not just South Africa, but it's global. And even you mentioned, for example, even in the UK during COVID, one in five tenders for medical supplies are now red flagged. So corruption seems to be one of those balancing acts that the world constantly having to juggle.
Yes, everybody's involved in it, every country. And the UK, as I describe, especially during COVID, but British colonialism, including in South Africa, was deeply corrupt too. And what's common is not just the tendency for people to want to self-enrich, which is a common characteristic of humankind, sadly, but also the fact that when you win power, having struggled for it over many years, you seem to think you're entitled to it, and people become more interested in exercising power than they are in actually fulfilling the mission of those liberation and independence struggles.
I remember before 94, when we were training young people to run polling stations, saying to them, you know, you're going to find out that parliamentary politics is very different to liberation politics. And they went, ha ha, you must be joking, that'll never happen with the ANC, with Congress politics. And of course it did. And I wanted to ask you, when do you think the moment happened? Was it with the arms deal? Was it with later with Zuma? When did you sense that was happening?
It became shameless and brazen under former President Zuma, that state capture decade in which a lot of the institutions and agencies that Nelson Mandela, Oliver Tambo, and even Thabo Mbeki had put in place in order to establish a new democratic future for the country with, for example, a prosecuting agency that was independent, a police service that was impartial rather than an organ of the an acting in the national interest rather than as an organ of the apartheid security services. And Zuma especially dismantled all of that and perverted and corrupted them. So I think he was the principal villain, but the tendency had been in place before then, and indeed Nelson Mandela warned about that, as I record in my book, when he was president. And it continues today. It's not that it's disappeared, corruption. It's just less shameful, less shameless and less brazen than it became under Zuma and his cronies in business, the Gupta brothers.
Well, you know, I remember being in Parliament when Dr. Frederick Fanzel Slabbert, who was leader of the opposition at the time, was just leaving, and he was saying nobody becomes a Democrat faster than somebody who's about to lose power. And I think that that also applies to worrying about corruption. It's fine when the old white lot were in, you know, the National Party was in power, because it was massively corrupt.
It was.
And in fact, I've written about how Flakplaas, for example, the torture farm, was used as a cash cow for senior politicians and generals. And we tend to just ignore that whole aspect of building up of this is what you can do, this is how you teach the next generation, and they carried on with it.
Yes, the sad thing about it and the tragedy of it is that what these liberation movements, including the ANC, do on getting into office is they continue the corruption that was already there. And people have said to me, particularly my white critics, have said to me, well, apartheid may have been brutal, but at least it was not corrupt as today's South Africa is. It was deeply corrupt.
Yes.
And full of self-enrichment in the defense industry, for example, and sanctions busting and so on. But it's nevertheless, for me, deeply, deeply shameful that liberation movements have gone this way.
I want to ask you one more question while we still have time. In terms of liberation and corruption, one of the things that you said in your earlier book, A Pretoria Boy, about your school days in South Africa, was, you know, you have to do something. You can't just sit around and say, oh, this is terrible. Get out and do something. What should we be doing?
I think we have to get the same spirit that drove the anti-apartheid struggle revived again for ordinary citizens to say, no, I'm not going to pay the bribe to the police officer who stops me for a spurious traffic offence. I'm not going to pay the bribe for a home affairs permit or a licence. Because unless you do that in ordinary life, you can't stop this cancer.
We've been talking today to Lord Peter Hain, ex-South African. A bit of your heart still here, I hope.
It is.
Whose latest book, Liberation and Corruption, Why Freedom Movements Fail, published by Jonathan Ball, is on sale now. FMR.